Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
One of Australia's leading beer judges.
People always ask, how do you get involved in sake and how does that connect to music?
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
The difference between getting good quality fresh hops, it just translates straight through into the beer.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. In this episode of the podcast, we meet Yolumba's head of winemaking, Louisa Rose. First released in 1966, every vintage of Yolumba, the Signature, Cabernet Sauvignon and Shiraz has been dedicated to an individual who has made a significant contribution to the culture and traditions of Yolumba, one of Australia's most important family-owned wineries. In 2020, Louisa was announced as that individual who would be the signatory on the newly released Yolumba The Signature 2016. Louisa Rose joined Yolumba in 1992. Previously honoured as Winemaker of the Year by multiple organisations, she is the current chair of the Australian Wine Research Institute and a Grand Master of the Barossa Valley Fraternity, Barons of Barossa. In a moment, you'll hear from Louisa how the signature traditions began at Yolumba and the significance of this wine, a great Australian red, as previously explored with Matthew Jukes on this podcast.
Well, it started in 1966 when the then Prime Minister, Sir Robert Menzies, was at an Adelaide Stock Exchange dinner. And the Yolumba 1961 Galway Vintage Special Claret was being served at that dinner, and he stood up and he announced that the best red wine he had ever tasted was in fact that wine. I've heard anecdotally that in fact he was asked a tricky question by a journalist and that was his answer for dodging it. But whatever reason he made that claim, of course he's gone down in the history of Yolumba as, you know, what a great sort of, you know, unasked for little bit of advertising you might have got. And so in 1966, we were about to release the 1962 Galway Reserve Claret, as it was at the time. And so we changed the sort of the concept of that to be called the, you know, the signature. Samuel Smith was the first signatory that went on that, or his signature went on that, and his story became synonymous with that wine. It's an announcement which, you know, the whole company sort of, you know, waits for with bated breath, because it's always somebody that those of us working here know. Sometimes it's a very public person. In 2012, for example, it was our current owner and managing director at the time, Robert Hill Smith. As I say, you know, sometimes very well known, like Robert, but sometimes somebody that's not so well known. So we've had vineyard managers that have worked in the company for, you know, over 40 years that, you know, the winemakers and production people, of course, know, but wouldn't be so well known outside of the immediate winemaking area. But it's always, you know, so it's always a really sentimental thing and a quite humbling, you know, when it's your name that's announced.
Now, you said in the press release, I can't quite believe that I'm about to become part of that group. You've been there since 1992. It must be about time by now, surely.
Well, occasionally people would say, when's your name? I'm going to be on the back label. I said, oh, not for a long time, I suspect, because it is a company where people, you know, often spend their career here and their working lives. And there are so many, you know, people that have, you know, been here longer than I that I'm still working with. And it's, you know, not only do we celebrate the signature each year, but we celebrate people that have, you know, get to their 21 years of working for the business and 30 years and 35 and 40 and 45. And every now and again, somebody that's been working for the Hillsmith family and for Yolumba for 50 years. And so it is full of legends and stories and wonderful people. So I don't think, you know, since 1992 necessarily qualifies for that long. Maybe I'm just trying to pretend it's not really that long.
You've mentioned some of the things that you've really enjoyed about working at Yolumba, but what have been the things that have really kept you there, do you think, for such a long period of time?
Well, part of it, of course, is the Hillsmith family. You know, people become really loyal to a family that has great vineyards, great wines, great stories, but also that ability to look after people and, as I say, the community. It's part of the fabric of the Barossa. But it is more than that. And over the time I've been here, it's the business has grown. It's become an international business. Our wines have, you know, not that they were, of course, being exported before that, but as part of the Australian wine industry that since the 1990s has also become you know, really prominent on the world stage of wine. You know, it's been a great opportunity to look at, you know, both traditional regions and new regions, to look at, to work with really old vine vineyards and new vines and new varieties. So one of the varieties that Yolumba is really well known for example, is Viognier, which is something that, you know, we still talk about being a new variety compared to, you know, some of the older varieties that we've had in Australia for 170 years or more. But, you know, Viognier we've only been working with since 1980. So, you know, tradition and innovation, it's that wonderful sort of blend of the two, which, you know, makes Australian wine, but also, you know, particularly, you know, working at Yolumba, you know, such a pleasure.
I assume that you would have had an opportunity to, you know, taste some of the museum signature wines from time to time. How has that wine evolved stylistically, do you think?
That's a really good question. So I think evolve is a great word because wines do evolve. You know, every wine evolves and, you know, the great wine brands of the world, you know, are not static. You know, if they were, they would lose their relevance. And I think, you know, evolution of wine styles and sometimes, you know, revolution is important as well. The signature has always been in that what we talk about, you know, and we don't use the word, you know, publicly really anymore, but that sort of claret style. So that dry red style that Australia was, you know, really well known for right through the 1900s and, of course, into the 2000s. In the case of the signature, it's usually been a Cabernet Shiraz blend, and it certainly it is since the mid-90s, it's absolutely been from the Barossa. Usually had Barossa fruit in it, but the early signatories were blends of, you know, often of different regions, often of Coonawarra Cabernet and Barossa Shiraz. But as the world has become more focused and the Australian wine industry absolutely on regional identity, it's evolved into becoming a Barossa wine. And the evolution of the use of oak in wine around the world has also been part of the style of that wine. So it had a phase there through the, you know, through the 90s, like many Australian wines did, of using a lot more new oak. And even though new oak is still an important part of the wine, it's now only about 25% of the wine. So that evolution has continued. And while it's always had a significant amount of oak made by the Yolumba Coopers, and Yolumba, that is one of the unique things about Yolumba. We have our own cooperage here, we have our own coopers, and we make a significant percentage of the barrels that we need. The Yolumba signature these days is only matured in Yolumba coopered oak. And it's a mixture of oak from France and from Hungary and from America. So it's not, we don't just focus on one company, but we do focus on it all being bent and toasted here in our Yolumba cooperage.
You mentioned how the signature is made in a claret style. Maybe you could just give me a bit more detail around how you would describe what an Australian claret is, because it's a term that gets bandied around a fair bit, but when you actually read up on it, it's also kind of vague, I find, as well, in terms of the varieties that you can use and the breadth of, you know, stylistic range there is under that one sort of nebulous term.
Yeah, and I need to be quite clear that claret is a now a protected word and has been for a couple of decades, and it's part of the words that the Europe has as a collective term, and it typically referred to wines coming from Bordeaux into England. So it was very much, that was what a claret was. But like most of those what are now protected words and descriptions, like champagne and burgundy and in port and sherry and all of those words, that Australia used them for many years to describe our styles of wines. However, it's so much a part of the history of Yolumba. And if you go into our museum that you mentioned earlier, we have a beautiful collection of, you know, old wines, many of which are labelled claret. You know, right back to the early 1900s, those Galway clarets that I referred to before in Australia and particularly at Yolumba were usually blends of Cabernet and Shiraz, where Cabernet gives us, you know, structure and aromatic that you would expect. I always think about Cabernet as being quite a serious variety. It's got that lovely sort of tannin structure, you know, cooler flavours and, you know, like sort of, you know, the greener mulberry, you know, sometimes minty, sometimes eucalyptus sort of characters, often that dark sort of chocolate, but a very sort of serious, you know, stand up straight sort of variety. And then Shiraz being a bit softer and a bit rounder, a bit more fun, and I, you know, I always, in my mind, I think about Shiraz sort of, you know, wrapping around the Cabernet and giving it a cuddle and saying, you know, don't be quite so serious, Cabernet. We can make a really long-lived wine together. but one that is eminently drinkable from the day it's made for, in many cases, you know, 10, 20 plus years.
They fell out of favour for quite a while, didn't they, Cabernet Shiraz blends?
Yeah, I think the problem was that as Australians we were drinking styles, but in some cases, you know, we were seeing our parents drinking styles. So, you know, wine is also about fashion, and generationally we typically, you know, we want to do something different to what the previous generation did. So, you know, that I think is always part of things perhaps, as you say, falling out of favour. But then, you know, as we were signed that bilateral trade agreement with Europe, in the early 1990s, I think, when that was signed, late 80s, early 90s, and there was agreement to phase out some of those descriptions and some of those stylistic terms, Australia became more focused on labelling by variety. And labelling by blends was just a bit more of a difficult story. So many wines that might have been blends in, you know, in prior vintages became single varietal wines. And Shiraz became, you know, the darling of a lot of Australia, and particularly in the Barossa. And, you know, a lot of wineries just stopped making the blends. So Cabernet Shiraz, Shiraz Cabernet blends in some cases became straight Cabernets, depending on where they were from. Others became straight Shiraz. So it was only sort of the diehard people that really, you know, like Yulumba, not exclusively, but we were certainly one of the champions of maintaining that blend. And the signature has been the champion of those wines over the years for us.
Do you remember any internal conversations around the importance of that blend historically to Yulumba?
Absolutely. And that's, you know, one of the reasons we've been so keen to maintain it, because not just the conversations, but because of the continual family ownership, our archives, our museum of wines, you know, we have the ability to go back and look at all that history, to see that we've been buying Cabernet from Eden Valley growers, for example, you know, since the late 1800s, and blending it with Shiraz. We see those wines, you know, we don't have wines back in the 1800s, from the 1800s in that style in our museum, but we certainly do from the early 1900s. You know, we know we were buying, you know, Cabernet grapes and wines from friends in Coonawarra in the 1920s to blend with Barossa Shiraz. And, you know, we taste those wines, I'd like to say regularly. It's perhaps not as regularly as we'd like, but we don't have a lot of them left. But we do see them in some of our special museum tastings over the years from the 1940s and the 1950s. And those wines are amazing. And, you know, we know the history, we taste the history, and it all sort of bundles up into how, you know, the styles that we want to make now, and as you said before, that evolution of wine to make sure that not only are we respecting history, but we're making wines that are still really relevant to, you know, today and to the future, and, you know, for the next generation, you know, as they come around, so, you know, how do we make it relevant and not be something that's just seen as something old fashioned and part of history.
You must have noticed, though, within Yulumba that the conversation around the Great Australian Red that Matthew Jukes and Tyson Stelzer have sort of started has probably helped, you know, that's that whole style come back into favour a little bit more recently.
Yeah, I think that, and they've done an incredible job of doing that, and it's, you know, it's always really helpful if you've got more than just one company or one wine to focus on that, that's for sure. And those two have done a great job. That Australia, that Great Aussie Red, has been a great story. It's been a term that, you know, many of us have adopted in our vernacular to talk about it. And the other thing, of course, about that, you know, about the blend of Cabernet and Shiraz is that it is pretty much, you know, an Australian blend. It's not something that we've copied, another region or another country doing, you know, in Europe, which, you know, does give it a sort of a special place in our hearts.
Now, you mentioned earlier on that the signature should be a wine that's drinking really well upon release. Has that been something that Yulumba's become more focused on in recent years as, you know, people sell the wines less and less, I think, as time goes on, don't they?
I can't believe that it hasn't always really been important for wines to always be delicious and drinkable. And I say that because great wines are always great. You know, they don't suddenly become great. Wines don't suddenly become in balance at a certain amount of time. You know, when I hear people say, oh, you know, that, you know, this wine will, you know, don't worry, it'll evolve and it'll be beautifully balanced in 5 years' time. I'm going, well, how can it be balanced in 5 years' time if it's not balanced now? I know as a winemaker that, you know, you know when wines are going to be fantastic. Unless you do something wrong and make a mistake, you can tell when you're tasting the grapes. You can tell from the really early times during fermentation and as those wines age. And sure, they evolve, but, you know, they're in balance and they're delicious and they're great from the day that they're made. Where in that age of a wine, you know, whether it be 1 year, 4 years, 10 years, 20 years, you know, people enjoy them most is a very individual thing. It's a very personal thing. But it is about, wine should always be delicious and drinkable. And I can't see that winemakers wouldn't have always thought that. Certainly there have been changes in styles and wines, you know, have evolved, you know, through being perhaps more alcoholic or more tannic or having more new oak and less new oak and all those sort of things, which change the expression of a wine at a given time in its life. But I can't believe that winemakers haven't always wanted people just to open their wines and enjoy them. And I'm not sure, you know, we talk about not cellaring wine as much as we used to, but I still think that cellaring wine is probably a fairly small percentage of people. I think most people, certainly they do now, and I don't really think it would have changed all that much over the decades. I think most people would just buy wine and assume that they can just open it and drink it, and why shouldn't they? Everything else we do in life is, you know, is about buying something and doing it. You don't go and buy your Maserati and say, well, I'm not going to drive it for 2 years because it'll drive better in 2 years' time.
In recent times, Yolum has actually released another Cabernet Shiraz blend, which is the Cayley. Tell me about the origins of the Cayley, because that's become a, you know, a really important wine for Yolum as well.
It has, and the Cayley is a wine that we've released first in 2017 from the 2012 vintage. So the 12 vintage was our first release, and we've just released our fourth release of the 2015. And the Cayley is another Cabernet Shiraz blend, and it is a blend of Coonawarra Cabernet and Barossa Shiraz. So I mentioned before that in our history, often the signature and some of our other wines, you know, were blends of different regions. And Coonawarra Cabernet and Barossa Shiraz is a blend that we've known, you know, for, you know, 100 years or more, you know, what a beautiful blend it could be, and it was. Our decision to make the signature a Barossa wine was, you know, about the beauty of Barossa and single region. But in the back of our minds since the mid-90s, you know, we knew what a great blend also Coonawarra Cabernet and Barossa Shiraz were for different reasons and all of those things. And we, you know, they're the two regions, Coonawarra and Barossa, that Yolum have huge history with, huge knowledge of, absolutely understanding the beauty of Cabernet from Coonawarra. Since the early 90s, we have owned Cabernet vineyards in the Coonawarra as well as purchasing grapes. So we really felt in 2012, you know, a magic vintage, that the time was right to start to explore, you know, that beautiful blend of the two regions again. Coonawarra Cabernet has its own expression, which is a bit different from Barossa Cabernet. Barossa Cabernet has lovely, you know, aromatics. It's got that sort of dark chocolate sort of characters. But Coonawarra Cabernet also has that lovely sort of expression that comes from more of the maritime influence that Coonawarra has. Even though it's not that close to the sea, it's about 80 kilometres from the sea, it's still, you know, such a beautiful sort of low altitude area. It gets a huge influence from those sea fogs that come right off that Southern Ocean. And, you know, that gives it that beautiful sort of oyster shell sea spray character that overlays it. So a different expression of Cabernet to the Barossa, you know, very, very aromatic with its sort of mulberries and mint characters. And so blended in with Shiraz, you know, we just think that makes a wine that's, you know, that is a different spectrum to what the signature is. And the Cayley is also, you know, typically has a higher percentage of Cabernet in it than the signature does. The signature is always Cabernet dominant, but usually somewhere in the 50%. For example, the 16 signature is 53% Cabernet. But the 2015 Cayley, which we've just released, is 74% Cabernet. So it's still that blend, but it has a slightly higher fingerprint of Cabernet influence in it.
The vintage of the signature bearing your name is the 2016. Tell me about that vintage for Yolum.
So a 16 vintage was, you know, it was quite a benign vintage, really, which is what we love. You know, we had, you know, what we like in winter, which is, you know, some good rains. We had, you know, warm, even dry springs, so no frost, which is always good. You know, quite sort of even temperatures. So it was fairly dry. We had a little bit of summer rain in a fall, which is not unusual for us. We are a very dry, you know, Mediterranean summer climate here, which is perfect for grape growing. But every now and again, you know, we will get that little bit of tropical weather that comes down and just freshens everything up. So that happened in January, which was perfect. And, you know, really it was just one of those lovely sort of vintages where everything worked well, everything came in at the right sort of pace, and we've made some delicious wines from it.
A vintage befitting your name then.
A perfect vintage.
Now, what about outside of your lumber? What are the wine styles that you're most excited about drinking at home, and what does your cellar look like at home?
My cellar, yes. Well, I've always had this dream of actually cataloguing my cellar and knowing exactly what's in it, and I've never quite gotten around to doing that.
Well, if you have a need to catalogue it, then that's got to be it. It must be in yours. Is a lot bigger than mine is.
It's got all sorts of things in it, you know. So it's got everything from, you know, German Rieslings, which, you know, I absolutely love. You know, that beautiful sort of tension between acidity and natural, you know, residual sugar, and you know, the purity of those wines, you know, to, you know, through, you know, some of the older regions of Europe. But then it's got a lot of Australian wines in it as well. It's got everything from Pinot Noirs from Tasmania, you know, to, you know, the full-bodied, you know, red wines of the Barossa. When I'm drinking at home, if it's something I just need a glass or two of while I'm cooking, it's probably, you know, an Eden Valley Riesling or a Barossa Grenache. But you know, that smorgasbord of beautiful sort of foods and options we have for cooking with in Australia is, you know, I think should be reflected in your choice of wines. And it, you know, it is for me as well. I've said this before, but, and I don't practice it probably as well as I should, but, you know, we seriously, you could drink a different wine every day and never have to come back and drink that same wine again. You know, the options of wines and styles and varieties out there is so enormous. And, you know, it's a real privilege for us in Australia, I think, to have so much availability of great wine.
What's coming up for you over the next few years? What are the projects at your lumber that you're most excited about working on?
Good question. This concept of making sure that, you know, wines are relevant. You know, the stories and the history are, you know, incredibly important as, you know, as part of the fabric of what we're doing. But, you know, that doesn't, your wines don't stay relevant without a lot of work. And that involves, you know, continuous improvement in vineyards, you know, making sure that, you know, the old vine vineyards stay really healthy, that we're not inadvertently introducing, you know, pests and diseases, you know, to them. They're like looking after antiques, some of those vines. So that's a really important, you know, ongoing project. Maybe doesn't sound quite as sexy as new varieties and things like that, but incredibly important, you know, as is, you know, continuing to make sure that, you know, that wines and wine balance and, you know, then the oak that we're using, you know, is making the best wines we can. So, you know, knuckling down and just continually improving is sometimes as important a project as something really exciting like a new variety.
That sounds like a good note to finish on. Thanks so much for joining me on the Drinks Adventures podcast, and congratulations again on being the signatory on the new release 2016, Your Lumber the Signature.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope you have the opportunity to enjoy the wine.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson. Like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.